All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, December 30th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We're about halfway through. I know these are like the hardest weeks of them all, the very last ones of 2015. It is 38 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. Almost all the snow has melted already, because we only had a sprinkle. But hey, it is almost January in and up and around the Great Lakes, and we have yet to get any type of sizable precipitation, and I am very happy for that. So, where did we leave off days ago? Over the last few days, I want to thank all the guests who've come on. We have done some discussions of Christmas past with friends of Christmas past. We had Zori and Lady Pitbull, former co-hosts of mine on the show. We had Mr. JJ Inc. join us as well. JJ had a show here. We've been broadcasting compadres for quite a long time, so it was fun. It was a good time to have everybody on. And thank you very much, guys, because especially this time of year, it's really hard for me to focus and have something in my head to talk about, because it just doesn't happen. Second I get distracted, it's like, oh, there's a watch. I don't know. There's a shiny bauble of some kind, and it's very hard for me to concentrate and put a show together. So, thanks very much, guys. But we are back today. So, hopefully I can pull together long enough to think for an hour in contiguous thoughts. Where do we leave off? This was on December 23rd, which was a week ago, and oh, I might sneeze. Yeah, it was a week ago today. Called Google Stratospheric Cell Towers, NASA, SpaceX, and drones. And we talked about a lot of things. There were 2 days that we looked at that Google Loon project, where as of January 1st, they're going to be launching these balloons. And you know, it's funny because I mentioned this to a friend of mine who usually doesn't pay a lot of attention like I do, but definitely pays attention. When I mentioned the Google Loon, and their change of plans to launch this over the United States as of January 1st. And they say now it's for a 2-year experiment. But like I said at the time, who does a 2-year beta test? You know, I do lots and lots of beta tests. And beta test is maybe a couple weeks to get all the kinks out, not 2 years. But they are starting this test as of January 1st, going to be launching cell towers into the stratosphere. And using them over the United States. And like I said, when I mentioned that to my friend, they said exactly what I did when I first saw that news. Hey, what? Wasn't that going to be over Africa? Well, yes, it was. But they, for some reason, did a complete turnaround and decided that it would be more in their best interest to put all these cell towers over the United States. Now, another thing that we found, and actually, maybe we'll take a look at this. Today, I know some of you read it in chat, but we did not look at it on air. The FCC application that went along with Google wanting to put these cell towers in the sky floating on balloons in the stratosphere, they've redacted a good part of the application. Now, in talking about that with a few friends of mine or more in the know, yes, trade secrets can be redacted. But it isn't typical like the way this is. I mean, I don't know. I think if you're a public company and if you are putting out a product that's going to be affecting, spraying, spewing everyone underneath you with some sort of radiation or frequency, that you have to go get an application to be able to use that bandwidth. Shouldn't people be aware of that? Just to me, it seems like by redacting this whole thing so we can't see the actual frequencies, that they're trying to pull the wool over our eyes. And I would guess that that is the case. All right, guys, sorry, I had to cough there. I'm still struggling a little. Not that bad, but got to tell you, Pop sounds way, way worse off than me. All right, so anyway, back to this. My order's all messed up. Back to this Googaloon. So they're planning on launching all these balloons. I wanted to take a look at this application. So here's a letter that comes out of Google, dated November 24th, 2015, redacted public version, subject: public and redacted version of request for confidential treatment and complimentary exhibits. So they actually had to put in a request for their confidential treatment. Google Inc. pursuant to, and then they give some statutes of the commission's rule, request that certain information provided in the above referenced experimental radio service license, it's kind of weird, I don't know, experimental radio service in the clouds, in the stratosphere, be treated as confidential and what? And not subject to public inspection. Why would that be, do you ask? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out. The designated information constitutes confidential and proprietary information that, if subject to public disclosure, would cause significant commercial, economic, and competitive harm. Yes, cut and paste. That is the standard spew when you're begging to keep your stuff private. Wish that worked for me. Wish that worked for me keeping all my information private online. You know, none of us have that luxury. As described below, Google's request satisfies the standards for the grant of such request as set forth in sections, you know, blah, blah, blah of the commission's rules. Identification of the information for which confidential treatment is sought. Well, Google says their request for confidential treatment is limited to the following information that has been redacted from the experimental license and complimentary exhibits. Google does not seek to withhold from public inspection information necessary for interference mitigation, including the applicant name, the content, the contact information, the test location, the frequency, so they said that they give them, output power, effective radiated power, emission characteristics, and modulation. But then you scroll down through, and I'm just going to tell you, like, so here's, like, part of the thing, and it's all redacted. Now, here's something interesting, Zori, if you're out there. So on this application, you scroll down, and there's tons of redacteds in the middle here, just lots of garble. Then it says Exhibit B, technical information. And there's a chart. You got technical details, technical contacts, equipment, of course, redacted. Number of terminals, redacted. And it's also for the title of that whole section, it says redacted transmitter equipment and station details. Like, what an oxymoron. The only thing they tell you is that it's, oh, mobile. Frequency ranges, redacted. Oh, come on. But down below that, and this is what I found interesting, Google will limit its transmissions to those channels where it will not cause interference to licensed users in the vicinity of its operations. See additional details set forth in Exhibits A, C, and D. And then I'm assuming I don't know what this is. It's so, like, they're like, oh yeah, we're just gonna redact things that We'll give away our secrets, except it's so redacted. I don't even know what this chart means. What caught my attention looking at this thing that we don't know what these numbers are is that it says emission designator, and then they give these two numbers, bandwidth. It's going to operate, this redacted radio is going to operate between 60 and 580 megahertz. Ding, ding. Nazori, weren't you just talking about the 450 megahertz, the research that was going on with some of the mind control that you mentioned over the last few days? So this Google radio, apparently, even though they said it's LTE technology, which is your 4G, they can operate those transmitters within different frequencies. It says, during the course of testing, Google plans to operate transmitters with a range of bandwidths between 60 and 580 megahertz. In no case will the bandwidth be smaller than 60 megahertz or exceed 580. Nevertheless, precise emission designators for the transmitters will vary according to the bandwidth of operation. Now, operating in those wavelengths, and remember too, that is where a lot of the first responder frequencies are. I'm sure there's a lot of other things that are down in those lower ranges, but they're going to have access to the entire U.S. sky in the stratosphere to do whatever they want with these radios. Now, here's a connection, and this is something that I have been thinking about. Remember when we discovered that Verizon was going to be working with NASA and trying to develop some sort of FAA tracking type agency for the coming of the drones, which are about to be launched upon us in 2016. I came upon a story yesterday. You know, the original story we read, it said Verizon and NASA and like 13 other companies are all going to be working on trying to come up with a way to do air traffic controlling for these drones that'll be commercially delivering things all over the United States. Well, here's the story I ran across. This is from July. But I wanted to find out who some of those other individuals were, because I had a thought. With Google all of a sudden changing their business plan for putting stratospheric cell towers all over Africa for internet, and all of a sudden it ends up being here. I mean, it's just odd to me. You don't make big like 1-2s like that with a big project unless there's something in it. What's in it for me? With them, right? Remember that. And lo and behold, what did we find? Because it made me think, well, Verizon's cell towers, and they were going to use the cell towers and the satellites to do triangulation for these drones while they're in the air. Well, here we go. Google and NASA working together to design drone air traffic control system. Ding, 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 ding. So they all working together. Verizon, NASA, Google, Amazon. Oh, yeah. Google is partnering with NASA and 13 other companies, including Verizon and Amazon. Think about them. Verizon, Amazon, Google, NASA. I'd like to know where the other 13 companies are. To create an air traffic control system for drones called the Unmanned Aerial System Traffic Management, or UAS for short. Drones are the way of the future. Yes, let them keep saying that. Rather than letting the air be clogged with unruly, unregulated, unmanned robots. How horrible. Unruly, unregulated, unmanned robots. The government is seeking to work with the private sector to create rules of the aerial road. This move comes after a series of accidents involving drones, including crashes at national parks and on the White House grounds. I thought I just saw one that Obama got zipped by one when he was in his limo or something. Yet for some businesses, the regulations cannot come fast enough. Companies like Google are clamoring. Ding. I wish I had some sound effects to make a clamoring sound. If I had some empty pots and pans out here, I'd blubbling. That's what it makes me think of. They're clamoring around to get involved with designing the UAS traffic management system so they can get in on the bottom floor of emerging multi-billion dollar drone economy. And you know, guys, having been there and having had my hands in helping write the standard for all of e-commerce on the internet, yes, I was there. There was a very small group of people at a few very large organizations who were the only ones capable of being able to do large global e-commerce with their backends online. I mean, we backended any little rinky-dink website, then soon to be like buy.coms, who wanted to sell computer parts online. But we were the backend e-commerce system. But in order for that to roll out across the planet Earth, we had to standardize how items were SKUed across the board. So like all hard drives had to have HD for hard drive in the description. And we had to decide whether or not for hard drive size, we were going to have a space between the number and the megabyte at that time, and then gigabyte, terabyte, or if they were going to be all together. We had to decide what else was important, like the physical height size of the hard drive. Is it a, back in those days, 5 1/4 or 3.5 inch? 2.5 inch for a notebook. We had to decide how those were all going to appear. So from then forward, everybody else would share those same standards. And everybody, all the manufacturers, all the e-commerce places had a yardstick to start with. Well, that's exactly what they're doing here. And I'm going to tell you what, anyone who's in on that ground floor has lots of know-how, makes lots of connections, and typically ends up doing extremely well in the back door. So the fact that, of course, Google wants to get on board here, we've already established that they have been so in bed with the feds. There's a revolving door now between DARPA and Google. You know, DARPA is a direct connect into the DOD's Manned Science Division. We have Regina Duggan and good old DARPA Dan now working over there on our Internet of Things division, the Swallow a Pill and Gain Your Magic Powers division, according to Regina Duggan. And we'll look at that, too. I have a new story on the Internet of Things. Anyway, so the fact that Google and Verizon have jumped on board, and they're working with NASA. Remember, NASA is the yin, is that the white side? The yin of the evil duality that exists between NASA and DARPA. DARPA's the dark side. NASA's the light side. But they are one and the same as far as the dotted lines go. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen any documents that say this is the same group of people, we just walk across the hall. But I'm going to tell you, for everything that I've dug into, there's, you know, NASA is just a part of the Department of Defense, but not in a official sense, I would have to say. Dr. Von Braun warned us about weaponizing space, because he who weaponizes space rules the planet. There have been many space programs that have been about more than pretending we went to the moon. or sending probes out to Jupiter. Now, that's all cool shit. I love it. Trust me, space, sci-fi, junkie my whole life. You know, there's nothing quite like seeing images from a satellite that they launched when you were a child. And then when you were a middle-aged adult, those images start streaming. And you remember when that satellite went up. And I'm pretty excited, well, not excited, kind of scared too. That one that they sent up when Carl Sagan was around with the maps to Earth and the gold record on it and the drawings of humans that have now passed outside of our entire solar system to go places where nothing human has ever gone before. And then we had some big scientists out there, cosmologists going, whoa, I think we better go retrieve that. Because what happens? Let's look all throughout history. What happens when a more advanced race finds a more primitive race throughout human history? Oh, yes. Rape, pillage, steal, kill, take. So, I don't know. Kind of scares me. I think it's Voyager that's out there, but it kind of scares me that that's floating out there now with a map saying, come get us. We're prime pickings. And look, we're meaty too. Good nutrition. I mean, it's just kind of, I don't know, every dystopian horror sci-fi aliens coming to eat human movie comes to mind. But anyway, I digress. Sorry, guys. Okay, back to this Google thing. So Google is in bed with NASA and DARPA. And I'm saying that I really, truly believe that NASA and DARPA are like the yin and the yang. And you know where that all came from was that X-37B and the baby space shuttle I posted. You know, they tried to hide a lot of that, but I followed it very closely while it was happening. The X-37B, and at the time it was just the X-37, maybe they had the A model. But then they came out with the B model, and I think it was Boeing. But it was supposed to be the traveling component to the space shuttle. I dreamt about the space shuttle last night too, by the way. And I don't normally, but for some reason I did. It was supposed to be the component of the space shuttle that would travel to the International Space Station to deliver supplies. So when we retired, when Obama retired the space shuttle, they took that X-37 unit and they gave it to DARPA. And I guess from what I was digging into, DARPA's already had their hand in there for a long time before that, but they physically took control of it. They put it on some secret missions. I really think that it was kind of one of the first unmanned aerial vehicle drone space planes that they were experimenting with. Then they transferred it to ownership to the Air Force into their secret division where they've been now flying secret. I think there's four or five now secret missions. It's been on for years at a time, flying autonomously in the sky. But because they took all that, we, of course, have now no secret space plane to make it to the International Space Station. I saw something the other day, too, that we announced that we're going to remove ourselves from the space station and we're going to focus our time on Mars. So I don't know if we're going to give up our slot or whatever. But the fact that we have to depend on other countries to get supplies up to our astronauts is kind of disturbing. Now, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos from Amazon have also, both of them have been working on these reusable, launchable rockets. I believe it was Musk who was working on the space plane. I don't know if Bezos was doing delivery or if he actually was going to be doing to the space station as well, but I would think so. So there is private investment. I also mentioned back the other day when we first started talking about this, and I found the story, so I'd like to read this just because it ties all these guys together. Like, don't think, you know, all these big corporations and these billionaires dumping all this money. Oh, here's the X-37B story. Dumping all the money into the stuff. You know, this is not for our benefit. I truly don't believe that. This is for the benefit of those who help make it all happen. Like I said, even to the beginnings of e-commerce, being part of the group that helped develop those standards, something that simple. It didn't cost $1 billion, but it put us in the driver's seat. That's what happens when you're at the forefront of a technology or at the forefront of a paradigm change. You become one of those in the know. And it's very beneficial for you in the new order of things that is established afterward. So the fact that these guys are all up front and they're being all like philanthropic and everything and chucking $1 billion here and $1 billion there to save the planet. Well, I hate to tell you, but it's not about their big hearts. Okay. It's about who's going to be driving the train. Apologize, I had to blow. All right. Here, let's read a little bit of this. Because I've talked about this so many times. And the documentation is out there. So I just want to read this to kind of cement what I've said so many times about the X-37B or all the X-37 in general. But there's A, B, and then I saw they're working on another one. The Boeing X-37, this is the space plane, the original, also known as the Orbital Test Vehicle, or OTV for short, is a reusable unmanned spacecraft. It is boosted into space by a launch vehicle at the time, which happened to be the space shuttle, and then re-enters the Earth's atmosphere and lands as a space plane. The X-37 is operated by the U.S. Air Force, yes, currently it is, for orbital space flight missions intended to demonstrate reusable space technologies. The X-37 began as a NASA project in 1999, before being transferred to the Department of Defense. And if you read further down here, yes, the Department of Defense's Mad Science Division called DARPA in 2004. It conducted its first flight as a drop test on April 2006 at Edwards Air Force Base. And the space plane's first orbital mission was launched April 22nd, 2010, using an Atlas Five rocket. Its successful return to Earth on December 3rd of 2010 was the first test of the vehicle's heat shield and hypersonic aerodynamic handling. And why that was important is because I believe that, well, there was the O-ring for the Challenger disaster, but the second disaster, space shuttle disaster, and I don't remember, that one started with a C as well. The one that happened February as opposed to January, Challenger, the Columbia. That was a heat shield problem. So that's why that was a big deal. The second X-37B was launched on March 5th of 2011. And very interesting, and what I wanted to point out is because when I really started digging into what the hell this thing was doing, it was after Fukushima. And remember, and I'm not going to bring up any conspiracy stuff here, but I've seen real documentation coming out of NOAA showing that there was a heating in the ionosphere right over Japan right before that mega earthquake. Now, could there be something with the electromagnetic whatever that happens when we start having earthquakes and rocks breaking or solar flares, you know, hitting parts of the atmosphere? It's very possible. I don't know what was causing the ionosphere to heat up over Japan, but within the 24 to 48 hours before that 9.0 earthquake that caused all that devastation and caused Fukushima, there were some satellite images that came direct out of NOAA that showed that ionosphere heating up to red hot white. Now, I'd been watching all those real-time stats coming out of even the, what was it called? And they discontinued it. The magnetosphere, the magnetometer. There was a real-time magnetometer that was tracking all of the particles coming off of the sun and how they were affecting our atmosphere. And that was in Japan, by the way, too. That's been pulled offline since. But anyway, so I had seen this heating of the ionosphere that happened days before Fukushima, which happened on March 11th, 2011. And check this out. The second X-37B mission was launched on March 5th of 2011. 7-6 days before Fukushima. And people have been saying before that they were postulating, they'd been tracking, because you can track this orbital test vehicle on the real-time satellite tracker that's online. And I could put a link to that in the notes because it's pretty cool. You can watch all kinds of things. But if you look for the OTV, which is the satellite, you can actually watch this thing and where it goes real time in the sky, all mapped on Google Maps. And there were people that were correlating earthquakes that we were having with places that this X-37 passed over. So when I started looking at the whole Fukushima debacle and knew about this plane and then saw those NOAA satellite images showing the ionosphere heating up right over Fukushima, I started to question a lot of things at that time. So anyway, I don't know, this continues on and on. So we had a third mission of the X-37, and now it is on a fourth mission that was launched May 20th, and they're all classified, by the way. So we don't know what this unmanned, formerly of the space shuttle program, then transferred to DARPA, now with the super secret Air Force flying missions. We don't know what these missions are for. Here, we're going to read a little bit more. 1999 is about the origins. NASA selected Boeing to design and develop an orbital vehicle built by the California branches of Boeing's Phantom Works. Over a four-year period, a total of $192 million was contributed to the project, with NASA contributing $109 million, the Air Force contributing $16 million, and Boeing $67 million. How interesting, too. Like, these are... This is a government corporate partnership. They all put in money to build this vehicle like an investment. I didn't know that Boeing like chucked money up front to be in on projects, because this is very much what now SpaceX is doing. And I mentioned that the other day, and good old Elon Musk. And for as much as I like Musk, Musk is in bed with the devil. Musk knows how to play the devil, but Musk is standing there face to face with the devil. In late 2002, a new $301 million contract was also awarded to Boeing as part of NASA's Space Launch Initiative framework. The X-37's dynamic design was derived from the larger space shuttle orbiter, hence the X-37 is a similar lift-to-drag ratio and a lower cross-range and Mach numbers compared to DARPA's hypersonic technology vehicle. An early requirement for the spacecraft called the Delta V of 7,000 miles an hour to change its orbit. The early goal for the program was for the X-37B to rendezvous with satellites and perform repairs. The X-37 was originally designed to be carried into orbit in the space shuttle's cargo bay, see, but then underwent redesign for launch on a Delta IV or comparable rocket after it was determined that a shuttle flight would be uneconomical. The X-37 was then transferred from where? Oh, NASA to where? Oh, DARPA on September 13, 2004. And thereafter, the program became a classified project. DARPA promoted the X-37 as part of an independent space policy that the United States Department of Defense had pursued since when? The 1986 Challenger disaster. So everything I've been telling you guys, that's the history of the X-37B. The X-37B is now in the hands of the super secret Air Force. Is a super secret program. And you can continue reading. I will put this link into the notes of this show. It's very interesting. And, you know, I'll tell you, that's when I first started pulling on the first thread of the connections between NASA and DARPA. But it goes way deeper than that. This has been going on for a while. So anyway, the reason why we got into that is to kind of establish how there's been this private-public partnership working between the roles of space and aeronautics for a long time. And we've known that. Those are a lot of the weapons manufacturers as well that are developing some of our airplanes and the F-35s and the bombers and whatever. But this X-37B is special because it really was kind of some of the skunk works coming out into the public light. And now we have Google that's kind of stepped right up and joined the team. Verizon's been in there for a long time because they've been a phone provider. So they've had to bend over and give it up to the feds for a long time, but Google hasn't. And Google is just really cutting their teeth at becoming assimilated properly and becoming a part of this drone air traffic control conglomerate. It's going to do just that. Okay. And remember, within the ranges of 60 to 580 megahertz, I believe, is what they said their frequencies are going to be for these towers in the sky. All right, back to the original story about Google working with NASA and Verizon on this air traffic control, as well as Amazon on this air traffic control program for drones. Companies like Google are clamoring to get involved with designing the UAS traffic management system so they can get in on the bottom floor of the emerging multi-billion dollar drone economy, along with 14 companies that have signed the agreement with NASA, another 100 enterprises and universities have expressed interest in the project. They definitely see it as an economic opportunity and as something that they want to participate in, says Brian Wynn, president of the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. This is real magic, he says. Oh, yeah. NASA began the project as a way to create infrastructure and rules governing the use of drones and other aircraft in lower altitudes. A UAS traffic management system for low-altitude airspace is needed. And much like today's surface vehicles that operate within a consisting system of roads, lanes, stop signs, rules, and lights, regardless of whether the vehicle is automated or driven by a human, says NASA, while incorporating lessons learned from the well-established ATM system, which grew from a mid-air collision over the Grand Canyon in the early days of commercial aviation, the UTM system would enable safe and efficient low-altitude airspace operators by providing services such as airspace design, corridors, dynamic geofencing, severe weather and wind avoidance, congestion management, terrain avoidance, route planning and rerouting, separation management, sequencing and spacing, and contingency management, the agency continued. You know, I was just thinking, too, for being able to coordinate all of this across millions of drones across the entire country all at the same time is probably going to require some pretty smart software with some pretty smart intelligence built into it, I would imagine. NASA's short-term goal is to develop and demonstrate the UTM system to safely enable low-altitude airspace and drone operations within the next 5 years. So, you know what? The reason why we looked at this was because of Google changing their plan from launching the Project Loon with the cell towers in the stratosphere over Africa, and now deciding they're running a 2-year project starting January 1st with a redacted FCC application over the United States. And we're asking why. I think this is the reason. Space Agency is working in conjunction with the Federal Aviation Administration and other government entities, as well as partners in industry and academia, to research, develop, test, and implement the system. So there you go, Google, 2-year test, all redacted, it's secret. Well, this has got to be it. But the question is, what else are they doing with it? The studies will focus on mapping out corridors and no-fly areas like airfields, creating a collision detection system, and programming an algorithm that will allow drones to safely fly in hazardous conditions such as rain or strong wind, which is particularly dangerous for light objects. We think that the airspace side of this picture is really not a place where any one entity or any one organization can think of taking charge, says David Vos, the head of Google's secretive. Now, this is the first time I've seen this one. I better copy and paste this into a search engine for later. David Vos, the head of Google's secretive Project Wing, the company's future drone delivery fleet. So Google, as well as Walmart and Amazon, are going to have a drone delivery fleet. What's Google going to deliver to me? What do I buy from Google? Google Glass? That they're going to bring me a YouTube video? What? Why is Google have a future drone delivery fleet? Are they going to contract them out? Come let them deliver vaccines? I mean, I don't know. Don't you think this is scary? Google, with all their robots they bought, all the military contracting robots like Big Dog and stuff, and now we're going to have a robot unmanned aerial vehicle secretive project wing drone fleet. The idea being that it is not Google that's going to go out and build a solution and everyone else has to subscribe to it. Oh, well, of course. But Google's all about world domination. Why not? The idea is really anyone should be able to build a free solution. Yeah, they put on their Google is not evil smile. Remember, you can't always tell the motivations behind the smile. On top of its drive to create a postal, as in delivering mail, postal unmanned aerial system, Google received a patent in June, allowing it to manufacture drone ambulances. Yes, I said it. They got a patent in June, allowing it to manufacture drone ambulances, which would A, identify a remote medical situation, B, determine a target location corresponding to the medical situation, and C, select a UAV, a manned aerial vehicle, from its fleet of UAVs, where the selection of UAVs is based on a determination that the selected UAV is configured for the identified medical situation. What a bunch of babble that is. And D, cause the selected UAV to then travel to the target location to provide medical support. We're going to have medevac drones, guys. Boop, 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 boop. All delivered to you by Google. Google Life Sciences. Oh, Google, oh, we need to take a blood sample. Remember they were working on all those blood sampling remote diagnostic devices? Oh, my God. Here, talk into this microphone so we can determine whether or not you're mentally ill. Voss, the guy that's in charge of this at Google, added that he believes in the future, thousands and thousands of drones will roam the skies merely a few hundred feet above the ground. Now, remember we did a story the other day looking at who actually owns above your property a few hundred feet, and that still is yet to be decided. But according to Google, he's predicting hundreds of thousands of drones in that airspace at some point in the near future. Amazon, under the guidance of founder and CEO Jeff Bezos, who, by the way, is the one who just launched in southern Texas that reusable rocket and landed it to the ground, is also well on his way to creating a fleet of delivery drones of his own. Now, Amazon, I could see. Don't forget, Amazon's still in bed with Alphabet agencies. They built... I dug that up. I never remember if it's the CIA or the NSA. They built them a parallel network for their data, and I don't see that I put it in here. I thought I looked it up. Maybe I... Oh, intelligence community loves its new Amazon cloud. There we go. Out of Fortune magazine. Clicky, clicky, let's see which Alphabet agency... Clicky, clicky, dee, dee. Central Intelligence Agency. Yeah, it's the CIA. The new Amazon Web Services built CIA cloud is more secure and capable than any of its legacy systems. Woohoo! So, thanks, Amazon. Anyway, what was I talking about? I don't know. I got one. Oh. Yes, the Jeff Bezos. And Jeff Bezos also bought the Washington Post. So it's a news outlet now under control of some sort of large corporate entity with lots of tentacles and close butt patent relationships with the CIA. Anyway, last July, the company, Amazon, petitioned the FAA for permission to conduct outdoor tests to create its Prime Air service. And we read all about this. They got pissed off and they did all kinds of tests up at the Canadian border until the FAA said, okay. But as part of the thrust to create this UTM system, NASA is holding a conference at the end of July. So this was 2015. This is already July 25th, so it must have been right at the very end of July, to, quote, discuss the latest developments in unmanned aerial system technology, solutions for privacy concerns and issues, and yeah, I'm sure they're so concerned. Safety and security, like, don't get between the spinning blades, and the future impact of low-altitude flight on the emerging business sector. The event is co-sponsored by the Silicon Valley chapter of the Association of Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. Google actually hosted a conference of its own in June to share its vision of air traffic control for drones. And Voss from Google said that computer networks, both on air and in the ground, in air and on the ground, will eventually set routes to dodge mid-air collisions with humans relying on computers. That's what I told you, AI, to make split-second decisions to keep drones flying smoothly. He also believes that the system should be decentralized with multiple private operators who are then overseen by the FAA. So there you go. Google is like so far in bed. So it's Google, it's Verizon, it's NASA, it's Amazon, and who the hell knows who else. 13, 14 companies. I could guarantee you Walmart is probably in there also. All right. Well. Let's see. Got a few minutes left. And I don't know. Do we want to do an Internet of Things story? Or maybe we'll start here. Yeah, we will do Internet of Things. And you know why we're going to do the Internet of Things? Because what makes the Internet of Things possible is ubiquitous internet access. And there are parts of the world who don't have it, which is why Africa and Google Loon Balloons over Africa was such a great idea. They were anticipating bazillions of dollars in growth in the mobile market, especially over third world nations where there is no data infrastructure currently, and the advent of mobile computing devices. Well, here we go. The Internet of Things is everywhere, but it doesn't rule quite just yet. Well, thank goodness. In the future, everything will be connected. It just won't be our phones that access the internet. It'll be our light bulbs. They already got that. Our front doors. Well, they could probably already do that too. Our microwaves. Our comforters. Our blenders. Your toilet. And it can be called the Internet of Things. The Internet of Everything. And that's what Cisco always called it. The Universal Object Interaction. I haven't heard that one before. Or your pick of buzzwords that begin with smart. They also were calling them enchanted objects. They all hold as inevitable that everything under the sun will be connected to each other and to the internet, and that will change the world. No kidding. We need to stop it. Juniper Research predicted that by 2020, there will be 38.5 billion connected devices. IDC says it'll be only 20.9 billion. Gartner, well, Gartner says 25 billion. The numbers don't matter except that they are huge. And you know what it's all about. They're seeing money raining literally from the sky. Between the Amazon drones, hundreds of thousands, Amazon, Google, who else? Walmart, drones flying all over the sky, and everything we touch and wear and hold and eat even are going to be connected to the Internet of Things. You won't be able to literally sneeze without somebody at central control knowing about it. And you're going to be like, what? They can't monitor all that data. Well, maybe not yet. They can collect it. We have enough space to put it all. And good old Kurzweil is working on making sense of all that unformatted data. So don't you worry your pretty little head about it. He'll figure out how to jam all those details back into your head when you die. Anyway, the Internet of Things is less about you changing the color of your light bulb and more about companies large and small finding new ways of making their business and your life easier and more efficient. But the market for connecting the device you use all day, every day is about to be huge. 2015 was the year everyone talked about the Internet of Things, but unlike before, it was the year everyone started making plans, laying the groundwork, and building the infrastructure for the day when all our devices are connected. It wasn't the year these devices took over our homes, but don't look now. There are suddenly Trojan horses everywhere. Did you buy an Apple TV this fall? You have a HomeKit hub in your house, and if you buy a HomeKit-enabled device, it'll be really easy to set up. Do you have an Amazon Echo? Try saying, Alexa, turn the lights off. Actually, that wouldn't work if you have a Philips Hue set and you already have done the work of setting things up. Which brings us to the real dilemma of the Internet of Things. is that as we face the end of 2015, how are all those things going to work together? Well, damn. Guess we're going to have to get some overarching group to come up with standards. There's Microsoft has Windows, Samsung has SmartThings, Google has Brillo, Apple has HomeKit, there's Wemo and Wink and Zigbee and Z-Wave and Thread. And I'm not even making any of these up. You can control some things with your fitness tracker, some with your universal remote control, and pretty much all of them with your phone. Some protocols overlap and some support each other. Others are more exclusive. But there is no simple plug-and-play option, no way to walk out of Best Buy with something you know it's going to work. And hey, it's like the beginning days of the internet. It says our homes are going to get smarter, but it's going to happen slowly at the rate we upgrade our homes. None of us wants to go out and do home renovations just to get that dang smart home. We won't run out to buy a smart crock pot or refrigerator, but the next time we're shopping for one, which could be a decade from now, we might buy the connected one. Yeah, I see this coffee maker. I think I mentioned it before, where you can program it while laying in bed with your smartphone to turn on, but someone's still got to put water in it. So if you forgot the night before, then you're still going to be getting your fat ass out of bed to go make that coffee first thing in the morning. Anyway, it is possible that some regulatory body will decide on a set of standards, which that's what always happens, and everyone will agree to support everybody else. But the technology is here. Connected light bulbs, connected tea kettles, connected fridges, fans, coffee makers, and cars, and soon to be connected people with your precision medicine. And yeah, it's possible, but the question now is how do we do it the right way? 2016 will be all about security. How to not get your house hacked or your home security camera or your car. But know this, it is coming like a tidal wave, the Internet of Things. And it's not a matter of if or when, it's when and how. And 2015 got it all started, but it'll be 2016. The train is coming. All right, guys, that was it for the Wednesday. Make sure you stick around because Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. And tonight, we have the boys from New York. We have Josh, Manti Tyranny News, Truth or Talk, and Nick and Dizzy. Everyone have an awesome Wednesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.